On Monday, the trial of former Enron executives Kenneth Lay and Jeffrey Skilling is scheduled to begin in a Houston court. Over the course of the trial, federal prosecutors will try to explain to a jury how the energy giant collapsed in December 2001 and why they feel the defendants ought to go to jail. Mr. Lay and Mr. Skilling are accused of several counts of fraud and conspiracy leading to the implosion of Enron. Mr. Skilling faces an additional charge for insider trading. Then the defense will explain why they believe Mr. Lay and Mr. Skilling are not to be blamed for one of the biggest corporate upsets in U.S. history. Enron was once the seventh largest corporation in this country. Its collapse wiped out more than 5,000 jobs and $1 billion in retirement savings. Joe Nocera is our friend from the business world and a columnist for the New York Times. He joins us from member station WCVE in Richmond, Virginia. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
And a lot of expectation of drama, I must say. What are we going to see on Monday?
Well, Monday, the jury selection will begin, basically. But I think this is going to be a long trial, 4 to 6 months. The defendants, Jeff Skilling and Kenneth Lay, have both said they're going to testify, which doesn't always happen in criminal cases. Andy Fastow, who is the former chief financial officer and faces as much as 10 years in jail because he's pled guilty, will be testifying against them. It'll be friends against friends. It will be technical explanations of transactions that we currently think of as crooked, but that Mr. Skilling and Lay's lawyers think will say are not crooked. And it has the potential to be one of the most closely watched business trials, I think, ever.
Do you think people are going to be glued to their sets the way they were for fill in the blank, the O.J. Simpson trial, or for that matter, the O.J. Simpson civil suit, because Daniel Petrocelli, who represented the Ron Goldman's family in that suit, is also representing Jeffrey Skilling.
If it becomes a case revolving around personalities and allegations and who done what to whom, absolutely. Although, you know, one of my mantras about this case has been the more exciting it is, the better it is for the prosecution, and the duller it is, the better it is for the defense. So it's very much in the prosecution's interest to do this quickly and not get mired in the details, and it's very much in the defense's interest to drag everything out forever.
Give us some idea of how complicated both the evidence and defense arguments might be for, after all, what are supposed to be a jury of your peers.
Enron fell because the company was essentially doing a series of transactions with itself through Andy Fastow. Mr. Fastow set up these partnerships. The partnerships were making deals with Enron. There was supposed to be a sliver of the partnerships that were owned by independent investors, which was supposed to make them a legitimately arm's-length transaction, which, of course, we all know they weren't. And Mr. Skilling and Mr. Lay are going to say, day after day after day, we didn't break any rules. And any rules that were broken by Mr. Fastow, and we didn't know anything about them anyway. That's the fundamental defense. And the prosecution's going to say, yes, they did break rules. And, oh, by the way, what was the purpose of all these transactions? Well, the purpose was to disguise the fact that you were running a sick company, and you didn't tell investors, and you didn't tell analysts, and nobody knew it. Except you guys, who were siphoning off millions of dollars in stock options and salary.
Anytime you have somebody as well-known as Andrew Fastow turn state's evidence, it gives the opportunity for the defense to argue, well, of course he's saying that. He's trying to blame us for his problems, and he's getting a good deal out of this.
Andy Fastow was like a double agent. He was doing, on the one hand, bidding for Enron, but he was also skimming off the top. And that truly, we don't think Mr. Skilling and Mr. Lay know about. So as witnesses go, he is damaged before he even gets on the stand.
Would the defense then be expected to argue, well, look, running a business into the ground isn't a crime?
That's precisely what they'll argue. They'll argue that, you know, this isn't all that different from the demise of a dot-com like Pets.com. Bad business decisions are not criminal acts. What may be a criminal act is whether disguising bad business decisions through a series of possibly legal transactions that add up to a fraudulent picture of an enterprise. We're going to find out if that's illegal.
Joe Nocera, business columnist for the New York Times, speaking with us from Richmond this week. Joe, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Scott.